How's your car looking? Showing its age? Faded paint? Dents? Dings? Don't worry. Maaco is here to help. They're the experts in affordable paint jobs and light collision repairs, helping you keep your car looking its best without breaking the bank. With Maaco's national reach and community focus, you're not just getting top-notch service. You're actually getting a partner you can trust. Visit your local Maaco today and see how they can refresh your ride. Go in, get the free estimate, and the expert technicians will handle the rest. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, ESW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
For the murder of William Miller, who was the gas station attendant.
But you're wrong.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff. Today's episode is all about truth. It's about setting the record straight. The term snowball, albeit a pun in this case, is the best description of what actually happened to Jamie Snow. One person tells a lie, which leads to a rumor, which gets spread and leads to even more rumors. The rumors lead to a lot of convicted felons using Jamie's life as a bargaining chip for their own. It went something like this. Someone says, "Hey, I wonder if Jamie Snow was involved in that murder." Then that turns into, "I heard Jamie was involved." Before too long, everyone in town is saying that Jamie was involved in Bill's murder. Then, here's a man in jail who had heard the rumors that Jamie killed Bill and is looking for a way out. He calls the police and offers to give them testimony against Jamie in exchange for a reduced sentence. I mean, after all, it's not like he's really snitching. Everyone is saying Jamie did it. Then, the more people that get deals in exchange for testimony, the more people are lining up to jump in on the gravy train. What you end up with is guys like Travis Gaddis sitting down with police, trying to work out a deal.
Texas Ranger James Holland is a legendary interrogator. They call him the serial killer whisperer.
"You can't hide those indications, and that's why yesterday I knew that he did it."
But now, shocking interrogation tapes reveal how the super cop really operates.
"And that's why they asked me to come in, because I'm special."
From Something Else, The Marshall Project, and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Smokescreen. Just Say You're Sorry. Listen and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm about to play for you a December 1999 police interview. A lot of the names are redacted, but the guy being interviewed is Travis Gaddis. As the story goes, back in the fall of 91, Travis is sitting around with his cousin Rick Bradford having drinks. In a drunken state, amongst all of the rumors flying around town, Travis tells Rick a story about how Jamie confessed to him. Then 8 years later, this is what Travis had to tell investigators. Notice at the end of this interview, Gaddis's conditions for continuing the conversation about Jamie.
"3 p.m. on December 26, 1996. I'm Detective Larry Shepard, Bloomington Police Department, and you are..." "We've talked a couple times previously, right?"
"Right."
"Right. And in one of our conversations, I asked you if you had any information about a homicide that occurred in Bloomington several years ago, the Clark gas station where William Little was murdered."
"Right."
"And did you have information about that?" What I can remember is.
Okay. What is it that you remember? Why don't you tell me what you've told me so far about how this conversation took place, who was present at the conversation, and what was said?
I remember around August or September of 1991, me, my brother Frank Roberts, Jamie Snow, and Mark McGowan, and some woman who I don't know.
Okay. How do you remember it was August or September of 91?
Because I got out of prison in July of 91.
Okay.
And I got locked back up in November, so it was in between August, September, October when the conversation, I believe it was in August or September, though.
Okay, so you got out of prison in July of 91.
Right.
And you went back in November of 91.
Right.
And this conversation occurred between the times you got out and went back in.
Exactly.
Okay. And you said Frank Roberts.
Right.
And Mark McGowan.
Right.
And Jamie Snow.
Right.
And some gal was present at this conversation.
Right.
Okay. Go ahead.
We were at, I can't remember for sure if it was, I believe it was at Six Points Road, now that I think about it. We were drunk, just partying, and we ended up back at this, I believe it was the woman's house who was sitting there with us. We was telling war stories. Mark McGowan brought up the issue about not catching Jamie for the Clark gas station murder. Jamie was saying something about, yeah, they weren't going to be able to convict him on it or get him on it. He then was talking about that they weren't going to be able to get him on it, and he said that he shot the kid because of that he thought that he recognized the kid from somewhere, so he had to take him out. I remember that.
Who was saying that?
Jamie Snow.
Okay.
And Mark was saying about he was hiding in a parking lot that's like behind, around the corner in the sense that he was hiding, waiting for Jamie, that he had heard the gunshot go off, and they fled on foot. I think that I remember, I'm not sure on this, that he said he indicated that the gun was buried or submerged at the gravel pits, and
the gravel pits were
by O'Neill Pool. I shared in school, and I remember that they said it was either a 32 or a 38 that the weapon was used.
What were they there for?
What were who?
You said that. Am I correct that you said Mark said that he was in the parking lot?
He was by the Clark station. He was waiting in the shadows behind. Yeah, behind in the parking lot.
Okay. And Jamie actually went into the station.
Jamie was the one who actually went up into the station and did it.
Okay, what were they there for? What were they going to do?
They was going to rob the place.
Okay.
And then that's when Jamie thought that the kid, after he robbed him, he thought that the kid had knew him, so he had to take him out. And now I just remember something else I didn't remember before. Mark said he was hiding behind a garage. And Mark heard the shot, and Jamie come running back there, and they fled on foot. But I do believe they said that they had a car waiting somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
and Jamie and Mark was telling, Jamie Snow and Mark McGowan was telling you and your and this girl this.
Right.
And do you remember who the girl was?
I have no idea.
Who
I remember vaguely what she looked like, but I don't know who she was.
What did she look like?
She's about 5'3", 5'4", long brown hair.
Don't remember her first name or anything?
No, I don't. I can't remember. I'm thinking there may have been two girls there. Maybe one of them was there, and then she left. Like I said, we were very, very intoxicated. Very.
Okay. You say you were real intoxicated. How do you remember?
I just remember certain points because, for one thing, it's a murder. You know what I'm saying? And certain things click with. Even if you're drunk, you're going to remember certain things, but you're not going to remember everything. And certain points just stuck with me.
Okay. Have you and Garen ever talked about that conversation? Or Franklin? Frank Roberts is...
Right.
And Frank also goes by Garen Bradford, right?
Right.
Okay. And... I'll try to keep it a Frank, but I keep on thinking of Garen, but... Have you and Franklin ever talked about this since that conversation?
We talked about it here in the county jail at one time.
How long ago was that?
Just, I don't know, a month ago maybe.
Why'd you talk about it? How'd it come up?
We were in church, and I told Garen, I said, well, I know a way that we can possibly get out of the stuff, the trouble that we're in, you know. And he said, what? And I said, about Jamie Snow. And he was like,
Have you talked to him about it since then?
I talked to him. I told him that you would ask, question me about it. And he was still was like, no, because... His biggest thing is he fears for his family's life, he fears for his own life, and he believes that he's not going to get anything out of it if he comes forth with it, but maybe getting killed over it.
Do you know if there is anybody else who has firsthand knowledge of this murder?
The girl, whoever she was, but I can't, like I said, I don't know, I can't remember her name.
At this point when we're talking, have I promised you anything?
Yes.
What's that?
You promised me that I would not be charged with anything, like such as obstructing justice or anything like that, and that you wouldn't harass my about it. Do you agree to that?
Yes. Yeah. That you wouldn't be charged with obstructing and that I wouldn't harass Garen or Franklin.
Or charged with any charge whatsoever.
Charged with any charge?
With any charge.
Pertaining to this?
Pertaining to this case, right.
Other than if you actually took part in it.
Right, well, I didn't take part in it, so.
Okay. And harassing doesn't mean...
I was in prison when it happened, so I couldn't have took part in it.
And harassing doesn't mean that I'm not going to talk to Franklin about it, right?
I meant as in scaring him into freezing up about the situation.
Right. Okay. Is there anything else you can add to it?
I'm sure I could if I'd sat down and thought about it really try to dig in deep in my mind and remember more parts of it. But like I said, I was drunk, very drunk. And a lot of it sometimes, I'm going to be totally honest, I don't remember, like when I say I think, I'm not 100% sure that them were the exact words that were used in certain instances.
Okay, like, what instances?
Like,
I don't think we expect you to remember
word for word of a conversation that happened 5 years ago, but the crux of the conversation, what you're telling us, is accurate?
Right, for as long as far as I can remember, yes.
Okay. And what you're telling me about this conversation is true?
Right.
Okay. Is there anything else you can add?
No.
Okay. It's 6:13 p.m. December 26, 1996. If we need to, would you be willing to talk about this again at a later time?
If certain things were done, yes.
Right. Okay. And by certain things, we're saying that we would talk to the state's attorney and see if you could possibly get some time out of this.
Some time out of it?
Some time reduced out of this.
Some completely reduced.
I mean, it's...
I'm about to get off into my other speculations here.
Well, we don't need to get into the other speculations. But you haven't, at this point, you haven't been promised anything, correct? Other than the obstructing justice and harassing Franklin.
Well, I don't want to be charged with nothing whatsoever.
Right.
Nothing.
Right.
Or I don't want my be charged with anything.
As long as they're not, as long as you or him are not,
neither one of us are involved. Neither one of us are involved.
Okay. So this concludes the end of the taped interview.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. With school out, summer is the perfect time to teach our kids real-world money skills they'll use forever. Greenlight is a debit card and the number one family finance and safety app used by millions of families, helping kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. Parents can send their kids money and track their spending and saving, while kids build money confidence and skills in fun ways. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/iHeart. That's greenlight.com/iHeart.
The state didn't end up using Gaddis to testify against Jamie at trial. The only reason that I can figure that they chose not to use his testimony would be because he made his conditions clear on tape. Even though other snitches' testimonies were less believable and some of them even failed polygraph tests, they didn't put their deals or conditions on the record, so the prosecution didn't have to deal with it at trial. Travis came to the police's attention because his cousin Rick Bradford felt the need to do the right thing after Gaddis told him that Jamie had confessed to him. Thinking of the hurt Bill's family must be going through, Rick wrote a letter to the Littles telling them what he had heard. A whole lot of time passes, and then 8 years later, Rick also found himself sitting in front of Detectives Katz and Barkas as they worked to build a case against Jamie.
At the Robinson Correctional Center, they referenced the William Little homicide, case number 91002150. The homicide occurred on March 31st, 1991, at the Clark Oil Station. Present during this interview is Rick, Detective Dan Katz, Detective Rick Barkas, and Lieutenant Jack Brookhart of the Robinson Correctional Center. Before we get started, Rick, I have to ask you, you're aware that this interview is being taped, of course, is that correct?
Yes.
And do I have your permission to do that?
Yes.
Rick, what I want to talk to you about is a letter that you wrote to the Little family back in 92, 93. Do you recall a letter you wrote to the Little family in reference to the shooting of their son?
Yes, I do. I believe I was in the Centralia Correctional Center when I wrote it.
Okay. Can you tell me, to the best of your knowledge, what you wrote?
Well, I wrote to them just at that time. I remember seeing something about that they were trying to get, you know, all the information they could about the death of their son, and who was a friend of my little brother's. So I thought, if there's something I could do to help, I wrote this letter about, I had talked to my cousin, Travis Gaddis, who said this Jamie Snow had admitted to him that he had done it. And, you know, like I said, I don't think Travis would tell me something. Unless he honestly believed that Jamie was truthful to him, I don't think he would have told me, because he wouldn't have believed him himself. But, you know, I just, for some reason, I just felt there was something about the way Travis told me. Like, he was dead serious. You know, this guy told me he did it.
So basically what you're saying, Rick, I apologize for cutting you off. So you're saying that for Travis Gaddis to tell you, he must have believed in his own mind that what Jamie told him was the truth.
Yeah, I believe that.
Did Travis tell you any of the circumstances involved or anything? Or how William Little was shot?
No. Like I said, it's been a while. I don't remember. I don't think he told me any, you know, specifics or details. He just mentioned the fact that I know shortly after that Jamie left the state to Florida or some other state. I'm assuming it was Florida. I think that's what he told me.
Who told you?
Travis.
Okay.
Told me this.
Now, why would Travis volunteer this information to you?
Well, because he's my cousin. I've known him since he was little. And, he knows it's, well, I mean, he figured, tell me, it's something he didn't figure I would repeat. But he also didn't know that the kid was, I mean, he was my brother's best friend. And it wouldn't matter who it was. I mean, that's just the way that kid was killed. It was wrong.
Now, Travis told you this. Where were you at?
In the West Pot of McLean County Jail.
And what, do you know what he was in for?
Burglaries, I believe.
Did he ever tell you this again?
Yeah, I think it was 95 or 96, he was released from prison. And at my apartment on Jackson Street, I brought it up again. And he was just as adamant then as he was in the county. Yeah, he was convinced that Jamie had told him the truth, and he did.
Can you tell us about what year the first conversation took place in the McLean County Jail?
I believe it was 92 or 93, I'm thinking. It was the end of 92 or... No, wait a minute. It was 93, because I got married in 93.
You were in the county jail, West Pot?
Yeah. End of 93, beginning of 94.
Okay, what were you in the county jail for? Were you serving a sentence? Were you awaiting?
Waiting. I was for forgery.
Forgery on a trial?
Yeah.
Okay. So you hadn't been to court yet?
No.
In your letter, just to clarify a point, it says, I was in McLean County Jail in 1992, and while I was there, I got involved in a conversation with a man named Travis Gaddis. Could this letter be wrong, or could you just be mistaken about the date?
I think maybe it was 93 I wrote the letter, is what I'm thinking.
So the actual conversation, your first conversation with Travis may have took place in 92, but you wrote the letter in 93.
I'm sorry about
that's
the dates.
That's all right. We understand. But it's just we want to make sure we get this right.
Maybe it was 92. I got there. They extradited me from Colorado. And I was just thinking it was 93, but maybe it was 92.
Okay.
But it was for your extradition from Colorado.
Yeah. That's
so we can check the court records to find out.
Right. I believe it was in December when I got to the county.
Okay. Second conversation you had took place at your apartment on Jackson Street?
Jackson Street.
And that's where you initiated the conversation with Travis?
Yeah.
And Travis again said that, yes, Jamie told him that he killed him.
Yeah.
And that Jamie had left the state.
Yeah. Same thing. He said that he went to, that's why he went to Florida. because, you know, he wanted to get out of the state. I guess it's just somebody that Jamie had been questioned about it or something. But, you know, he knew he was a suspect or something. But I really can't, I mean, at that point in time, I wasn't in a very good frame of mind either to really recall a whole lot of anything. You know, I do remember what I did then at all.
Yeah. You do a lot of drugs back then.
Yes, it was.
Did Travis say where this conversation took place with Jamie at?
I can't remember if he did tell me. You know, I wish I could.
Where's Travis now?
I believe he's in Big Muddy, I think.
So he's locked up?
Oh, yeah.
For what?
For burglaries.
Again?
Yeah.
Do you know if Travis ever spent any time in Centralia?
I don't know. It's possible. He's been, you know, the kid's been locked up more than I have, I think.
Do you have anything?
What, was there a third conversation or any other conversation besides the one in McLean County Jail, the one on West Jackson Street at your apartment about this with Travis?
No. I haven't seen him since then.
So you had two conversations with Travis about it.
Right.
And Travis has told you the same thing both times.
Yeah.
Have you had a direct conversation with Jamie Snow?
Just
about this, about the William Little homicide?
About this, no. No.
You know Jamie Snow?
Yeah, I know who he is.
You've seen him? How do you know him?
From the taverns, the bars.
What taverns did you see him?
Mostly Time Out, the old Sundown Lounge. That's where he frequented. That's where I always seen him at.
Have you heard anybody else? Have you ever talked to anybody else about the shooting of William Little?
Well, I've mentioned a few. Well, actually, I used to tease Larry Artis about it because he looks like one of the drawings, but other than that, no.
What did Larry Artis tell you?
He didn't say anything.
He did not. He never denied it?
No, he just kind of laughed it off. But that one picture with the guy with the hat on looks a hell of a lot like Larry, I thought. You know?
Now, did anybody else ever talk to you and tell you they thought Jamie Snow did it?
Oh, God, I mean, yeah, a number. For some reason, a number of people. Yeah, I'd never seen this drawing that looks so much like, you know, the one with the hat on. It does, but not, I mean, I guess, is there another one? Everybody seems to think that he looks a lot like this. Maybe this is a drawing I haven't seen, but, yeah, a lot of people that I talked to have kind of suspected that, you know, he was on the drugs pretty hard and, you know, pretty much doing a lot of shit that normally wouldn't be done, I guess.
Other than Travis Gaddis, is there anybody you think we should go talk to that would have some good information about the case? And if you don't know of anything for a fact, that's fine too.
The only person I know that was really, that was, you know, hung with Jamie a lot would have been Donnie Westerfield. I mean, I know he was pretty tight with Jamie. But I don't know if he knows anything about that or not.
I don't have anything else.
No, Rick, I really do appreciate you talking to us. A couple things I got to say at the end of this interview is that this interview started at 8:40 a.m. and is now 8:55 a.m. on March 19th, 1999.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code iHeart or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. American Family Insurance can help protect your dream home for whatever comes next. You can live in your own oasis or your own clubhouse. Whatever you choose, get the right coverage. Save up to 23% by bundling home and auto. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Rick has been following along with the podcast and decided that he needed to set the record straight. Even though neither him or Travis ended up testifying, he's now realizing that if we're ever going to get to the truth about who killed Bill Little, we're going to need the whole truth. Earlier this week, Rick reached out to Tammy Alexander and asked her to put him in touch with me. I got on the phone with him yesterday, and as it turns out, Travis was just a drunk guy talking shit. Rick, I won't take a whole lot of your time, and to be honest with you, I mean, I've read through police reports and things and listened to statements. You didn't testify at Jamie's trial, right?
No.
Okay. And neither did Travis Gattis, but his, I don't know if you've listened to it or not, but in his interview,
yeah,
you hear, it, to me, even though he didn't testify, it gave me a lot of insight into why a lot of people did. You know, everybody seemed to be wheeling and dealing for time cuts to give information.
Right. Which is what it sounded like to me with Travis's thing,
Right. Now, he got involved because of a letter you wrote to the William family. And I guess let me start with, this case has been a little unique in the fact that usually I spend most of my time trying to track people down. And in this case, I've had a lot of people reaching out to me. And you were one, well, sort of, you reached out to Tammy from what she explained to me.
Yeah.
So why did you reach out to Tammy?
Well, like I said, this all started in my apartment a long time. It came up, I can't remember why or how. And that's when, Travis was like, well, he did it. He told me he did it. I said, you mean, he actually admitted you? Ricky, and this is my cousin, and I'm believing him. He's like, look at me right now. He goes, yeah, he admitted that he did it. And the more I thought about it, because my little brother was best friends with this little kid. And I thought, I kind of knew the family around about way. And I said, as a parent, that's got to be. So I thought I was doing the right thing by writing her and said, look, this is what I was told. I don't know if this helps. But then after running into Travis again a few years later, it came up and he's like, I never told you that. Yeah, you did.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's when he said, I don't remember saying that. That's when I reached out to her. I said, wait a minute. So I wrote this letter, incriminating this man. And, I just felt that was the right thing to do to correct that.
So the original conversation you had with Travis in your apartment, that was back in what, like 93, 94, somewhere around there, 92?
Yeah, 93, somewhere, yeah.
So what do you remember from that? I guess we'll walk through the steps of that. What do you remember from your conversation with him?
How it came up, I don't know. I don't remember, but because I remember I made the remark, I said, well, I've known, Jamie quite a while. I don't see him doing something like that. And that's when he said, he did it. He told me he did it.
Okay, so he didn't just come out and say, oh, by the way, I heard this happened. You were talking about Jamie?
Yeah, but we're talking about the case that came up somehow, and I just said, I've known him for a minute. I said, I don't see him doing that, But when he told me that and said that, pretty much like he said in his interview, he said, wherever this was, I can't remember who he said. I don't remember Mark McGowan's name coming up, but I remember he said there was a couple of girls there and that he admitted that. And to me, it was just like, well, if he said he did it, and my cousin's telling me this, and I really didn't think about it until a while later when I kept following the paper and how distraught the family was. I thought, maybe I need to at least let them know what I know.
So how long did you wait before you, because you didn't call the police, right? You wrote a letter to Bill's family.
Yeah. It was, I don't remember the exact. It wasn't long, maybe a month, few months or something.
So it was around that same time. It wasn't long before you wrote a letter to Bill's parents telling him what, that Travis had told you that Jamie had admitted it to him?
Yeah, that's exactly what I wrote and told him.
Then did you hear anything more? Did you hear back from them or from the police back then? I know you did an interview like in 1999.
Yeah, that was, I remember it was two detectives coming to talk to me, yeah.
Okay, in 99?
Was it? Maybe it might have been that year, yeah.
Now, when you wrote in the early 90s, when you wrote the letter to Bill's family, did they write back to you or did they get in touch with you? Or did you just write the letter and didn't hear anything about it for 5-7 years?
I really didn't hear much about anything until they come and talk to me. Yeah, I didn't hear back from the family or kind of just forgot about it and was letting things take its course. But then after following, everything and seeing everything and then Travis telling me that, I'm like, well, I want my name out of this. I don't want no part of this. That man is not guilty.
What you just said there is what's not in any of the police reports is Travis telling you that he never said that, whether he doesn't remember it or whether it was, it's hard to remember lies. So if you're, if you're just talking shit, for whatever reason, you're out drinking, it wasn't true. It's easy to not remember it. So none of that's in the police reports. So if you look at the file, it looks like they just didn't have this guy testify, but he did know something. He did hear him confess. When did he tell you that he doesn't remember saying that?
It's been a couple years now.
So after Jamie was convicted?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, this was just a couple years ago. We just happened to run into each other, and it came up again. He's like, well, I don't remember telling you that. Well, you did. You stood right in my apartment and told me this. I mean, I didn't say nothing to him about the letter or anything that I had written, but the more I thought about it, I'm like, yeah, to me, it was a big deal because somebody was listening or looking because they come talk to me, and I'm like, I just didn't want no part of. If Jamie's innocent, I don't want to be a part of this.
Did you know that the police had talked to him and did that interview with him?
I didn't even know they did that until she sent me that to listen to. I had no clue they even talked to him.
I mean, first of all, let me tell you that, I don't think you have anything to feel guilty about or anything. I mean, it was an admirable thing you did by writing that letter to Bill's family. If you genuinely believe that your cousin was telling you the truth.
I did. Yeah.
It's interesting. The more I dig into this case and see that this is how the whole case happened. It's all these like snowballed rumors. So Travis is, drinking, doing whatever, and just starts running at the mouth. You hear it, you tell someone, you start looking at things like, so eventually you've got, a few years later, you've got Bill's family calling the state's, key witness, who was Danny Martinez, trying to convince him to identify Jamie and testify. And you wonder why, and it all kind of comes back around. If you trace all that back, which is what I've been doing over these several months, that all comes back to these rumors. They got a letter from somebody saying, Jamie did this, he admitted it to my cousin. So, of course, they think he did it.
Right, right. No, I agree, and the more I think, like I said, I've known Jamie for quite some time, and I just can't see him doing that. I really can't.
So why do you say, were you real good friends with him, or you just kind of knew him?
No, we were friends. We knew each other. I've been around him. I've been out, I've drank with him, been at the bars, and I've just never seen anything in his character that would lead me to believe he would be capable of doing that.
Not a violent guy?
No, not at all. Not that I remember.
Most people that I've talked to that knew him back then all seem to say that same thing, that they can't see him. I've heard from a lot of people I could see him robbing somebody, but not killing somebody.
Yeah, I didn't. Well, even the robbing, that kind of blew me away. I just never knew him like that. I knew he had that capability to even do that much. But as far as hurting somebody like that, no, I'd have to say no.
When was it that you knew Jamie? Time frame, like, was it early 90s and the 80s, all through that time?
Yeah, pretty much all through the 80s.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is your main reason for
reaching out and wanting to talk to me? Is it just to set the record straight because of what's in the police file from what you said?
Well, that, and I've been following this, and I go to the page and watch things, and the more I think about it, I think about, you know, the guy I knew, and it's, to me, none of this is just adding up. I mean, I don't know how he got convicted of this, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, I can see how it happened, you know, if you go through and see that the state was withholding evidence and putting pressure on witnesses, and, I mean, they were cheating the system. But even with that, there's still not much there. I'm still baffled how they convicted him, because it's just, the case is just air.
Yeah, no, it's like you said, it's just people saying this, people saying that, you know?
Mm-hmm. And that's, I'm really glad you reached out, because even though, you know, Travis didn't end up testifying, and ultimately neither you or him became a part of Jamie's case, you're still part of the record, but it gives us more insight into how this happened. That's why everybody that wants to, you know, reach out and explain to me what happened, it helps me to understand how he got convicted, because this was just another, you know, just a drunken shit talking rumor that snowballed into you guys being interviewed, trying to prepare to take Jamie to trial for murder.
I agree. And yeah, that's why I reached out to him. Like, you know, I didn't feel that what I said, you know, like science sealed his fate or nothing, but I just felt that I had to do my part and I felt I was doing the right thing once, so now I got to do it again.
Well, I really appreciate it, and I know Jamie does too. I haven't had a chance to talk to him yet this week, but I will for sure let him know that you reached out and that you're making the effort. Like, yeah, I think it's a good way you put it, that you were doing the right thing, and now you're still wanting to do the right thing and make sure the truth gets out there.
Yeah, I would like nothing better than if you shake his hand and welcome him home. You know, I think mistakes were made, and I think an innocent man's paying for it. It's time to stop it.
Rick Bradford is just one of many finally coming forward to tell the truth. In fact, I made contact this week with a key prosecution witness from Jamie's trial. Ed Palumbo testified against Jamie in 2000, and now he's ready to talk. That's next week on Truth and Justice. Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production and is distributed by Wondery. Mike Bussing is our executive producer, and Shane Yoder is our sound engineer. All music for the show is created, composed, and scored by PutThemInASong.com, who also mixed and mastered this episode. Our Season 7 logo was created by me, with assistance from Zach Weaver and Shane Yoder. All of our font across all of our logos and banners was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. You can find more of Tate's work on Etsy. Thank you to Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com for designing, creating, managing, and maintaining our website, Truth and Justice Pod, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. Thank you to our transcription team, Natalie Alicia, Pamela Westby, Pam Maples, and Jen Reese Incandela. And as always, thank you to all of you for all of your engagement and support. If you like the show and you'd like to support us, you can do so in a number of ways. To financially support the show, you can go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. On the Patreon page, you can pledge as little as $3 a month, and we also have reward levels on Patreon that include access to behind-the-scenes videos of the tapings of our Friday follow-up episodes, ad-free versions of all of our episodes, Truth and Justice Army t-shirts and hats, and even the opportunity to co-host one of our Friday follow-up episodes. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And lastly, you can always support us by supporting the companies that sponsor this program. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider for future seasons, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is engage in the investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com, or you can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. And for all of you tweeters, you can connect with us on Twitter. The show's handle is @TruthJusticePod, and my personal Twitter handle is @BobRuffTruth. And you can even follow Mike at MBussing89. For more personal interactions, feel free to follow me on Instagram @TruthJusticePod. And don't forget that we always have our 24/7 voicemail line open for questions, comments, and tips on our cases. That phone number is 269-224-2833. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch.
But as for now, I'm signing off. I'm Bob Ruff, and this has been Truth and Justice.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message comes from Greenlight. Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on what your kids are spending with real-time notifications. Join millions of parents and kids building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get started risk-free at greenlight.com/iHeart.
There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish, but breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.